The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 527, recorded on January 29th, 2019.
Welcome to the 527th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 360th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
Okay. So, everybody's having problems. We'll see if we can get through this. If not, we're going to have two people on a phone and one person on a computer. Anyways, what have we been playing? Well, I got Strange Brigade. I played it for an hour, and I sent it back. Here's the problem with Strange Brigade. It's a great concept. It has a quirky sense of humor. But the level design is ass. If you're going to do four-player co-op, A, I didn't have anybody to play with. So the difficulty was ramped up for me because it felt to me like it didn't account for just having one player. You know, so it's more like one person versus something that's supposed to be meant for four people.
Huh.
Kinda the guns felt like shit. The levels felt like shit. The creatures were fine, but like I said, they were difficult.
So the game was shit.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. Maybe if I was playing with four people, here's the thing about that, though. Any game is good when you play with co-op. I mean, Aliens Colonial Marines is fun when you're playing co-op. It's a communal experience. Huh. Everybody's enjoying screwing around.
It kind of looks like
enjoying the misery together.
Kind of looks like Dead Island meets Serious Sam.
It's very Serious Sam, especially since it has a lot of Egyptian mythology in it. So while I'm waiting for whatever next game comes, I'm playing Mass Effect 2. Just, you know, it's a story I enjoy reading. It's like reading a book again. That's what Mass Effect 2 is for me. Anyways, I know what TJ's been playing. I haven't looked at his Twitter. I haven't even examined him doing anything, but I know what he's been playing. And if he hasn't been playing it, he's a dirty, rotten liar. That has to be Resident Evil 2.
I've beaten it twice.
Okay. Just on a side note, one of my jobs at Game Watcher is finding mods, and I've been posting Resident Evil 2 remastered mods. And of course, you know what everybody wants, and that's that one that allows you to play as Ada Wong. there's also one that allows you to put Chris in the Bob's reporter outfit, because you might notice that when he runs, he has his jacket just flows with the wind. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, here's the thing. If you've been under a rock for the past week, Resident Evil 2 has been getting amazing reviews. Everybody's just been raving the shit out of it.
Yes.
So I'm assuming that the other thing, anybody who's been listening to this podcast more than 5 minutes knows that TJ's been salivating over Resident Evil 2 for how long? Since last E3?
Oh, God. We knew about it for a long time. We knew they were making it, but we had no idea what it was going to look like until E3 of 2018. And then, like, everything that we – like, it was just a quick cinematic trailer. But, like, the fact that it was confirmed, the fact that it was, like – it was tangible, it was seeable, made me so hype. And –
here's a little thing, though, that people may not know. Resident Evil 2 was not going to be Resident Evil 2. And you know this because while it says it's a remaster of the game, actually, there are some significant changes in it. Now, all the major moments that happen in it happen, mm-hmm. You know, everything that you remember. But a lot of the levels have been changed, a lot of the way and I heard a lot of people, and this thing crossed my mind, too, and you probably confirm this. This game is an awful lot like Dead Space, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we've talked about this before. It's Dead Space was like Resident Evil 4, and so this is like Dead Space. So it's kind of come full circle.
Wait, Dead Space had a little person and a Napoleon outfit?
No, it just had a bunch of little monster babies trying to tear you limb from limb.
It's nice that they change up the puzzle aspect of the game.
Well, no, they didn't really change the puzzles. They just changed the levels. You know,
they did in a certain way. Like the puzzles from the broad concept of them are the same in the fact that you, if anyone knows, you had to find keys that fit like the four suits of cards, like spade, heart, diamond, club key. And then there were these medallions that you used to open up a certain gate but the way in which you get those things, they did change enough to make.
Let's put it this way. It's everything you remember about the original Resident Evil 2. Everything, you know, it's like nostalgia filter. Like, this is what I remember Resident Evil 2 being like. Although if you played Resident Evil 2, you say, oh, God, it's shit now. You know, so it's like playing Perfect Dark, the original Perfect Dark, the original Perfect Dark. If you play it now, it's like, ugh, that's shitty. But if you play Perfect Dark HD, it's like, oh yeah, this is what I remember.
Mm-hmm. And yet you can still, you can actually get their original costumes. And I think there's like actual forms of Claire and Leon that are like the straight up PS1 blocky style, which is funny, but I don't know why anyone would want to do that.
They discovered Chris Redfield from Resident Evil 7, who was dummied out, you know, and they may still do him as DLC, but they unlocked it in mods so that you can actually play as Chris Redfield from Resident Evil 7 if you wanted to. Right. There's a lot of mods for it. I mean, if you want to play as the mayor's daughter, they have a mod for that.
They do change up some things. Like, it does hit a lot of the same story beats, but they change up, like, the pattern in which you run into them, and they change them up enough that, like, even though the main parts play out the same way, there's a little bit of uniqueness here and there that's really fun, that's really enjoyable. Like, as much as it is samey, there's a lot of refreshing elements that, like, make me feel like I'm playing it all.
You, in order to get a headshot, you have to shoot him directly in a tiny little spot between the eyes, because now if you don't hit that spot, the heads do shatter and they will stay alive.
Yeah.
You know,
like,
I mean, everybody loves the dismemberment stuff, a part of Resident Evil 2.
Mm-hmm. And like, not just that, but like, you look at, so I went on this tirade the other day, thinking about it after I beat the game the first time. I was thinking about, like, as much as I hate the last third of Resident Evil 7, there's a lot in Resident Evil 2 Remake that came directly from as a result of Resident Evil 7, and I really have to appreciate what they learned from that game. Like, every monster is a threat. Even just, like, regular zombies are like, a threat, because you can't just shoot them in the head and they die instantly. You really have to, like, every time that you waste a bullet, you feel it. Every noise you hear that's not your own, it builds a sense of dread. Every room you go into for the first time, you just
I shot him. Oh fuck, he's still crawling on the ground for me.
And there's a threat that you come across eventually.
With the thing that hangs from the rafters?
No, something else. No. That starts to stalk you around. And it's so much like they learned so much from using Jack Baker in Resident Evil 7, just like walking around the house, just like searching for you while you're just thinking to yourself, I fucking hope I don't run into that guy again. they included that here in Resident Evil 2 Remake. And I really appreciate, like, Resident Evil 7, as much as I'm not a fan of the end of the game, it had to happen for us to get here. And I appreciate it and everything they learned from it.
You know, Capcom's not ruling out Resident Evil 3, so if you want to fight Nemesis.
For sure. Like, they,
although a lot of people say they'd rather have Code Veronica.
I mean, both are good games. I think if we eventually got to both of them, everything would be really cool.
And like I said, you know, this is a remaster, but it's not a remake. You know, I mean, it's Resident Evil 2... But it's sort of like when you do a play, you know, it's the same play with the same dialogue and all that stuff, but you have new actors who are all doing it differently, you know.
It's like an arrangement, like a soundtrack, like the same music that you've heard before, but done in a different fashion.
Yeah. So Scott, what have you been playing?
I finished Ni No Kuni 2.
Ah.
Beat the boss there.
So now you know all the secrets, and you can't discuss them here because spoilers.
Yeah, exactly. But I really do want to reiterate that this game does make homage to the past, the first game. So it's not like they completely abandoned everything. They just wanted to do the game differently. They didn't want to just make the same thing over again with like a different veneer. So,
well, here's a question for you. Was the ending satisfying to you?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any sequel hook? Like, oh, this is going to lead to Ni No Kuni 3. No, it's going to be more like Final Fantasy, in which it's sort of, yeah, it's different game, different characters, same theme.
It'll probably be different characters, but yeah. I mean, they could if they wanted to continue the story.
We could always use another Final Fantasy type series.
Yeah, it's true. I think they'll probably do something different for Kanuni 3 whenever they decide to do that. It seems to be the pattern of what they were saying when they made this game, is they wanted to make it different. They didn't want the series to just be peddling the same thing over and over again and not have enough difference between those games. So it's like the mechanics will change, but the theme, the story, the lore of it will remain consistent.
That's cool. So, let's talk about Civilization. they revealed the new civilization, and it's Phoenicia with Queen Dido. And basically, her power is that she loves to steal your cities, because none of her cities experience disloyalty, and she can move her capital around anywhere she likes. So if she moves her capital to a city on an island with another person, even if it's 100 million miles away, it's not going to suffer any loyalty losses, and it'll exude the loyalty influence on that city. So, yeah.
Complete a project to move her capital, though, so it's not snap the
fingers.
But,
I mean, it's still a powerful tool.
Oh,
It's a sneaky – she's a sneaky thievy civilization.
Yeah, that might be ways to help you culture victory other civs, or at least take their cities away from them through culture. She also has a unique ship.
Yeah, she has a ship that's basically an overpowered galley, and she gets it a little earlier, so she can just bomb the shit out of you.
So what else? Yeah, and like the cities that are on the coast are the ones that remain loyal no matter what.
Yep.
As long as her capital is on that continent. I'm trying to remember what else she had. Yeah, it's the Byrene, and she has a unique building. Forget what it was.
Yeah. Anyways, it's coming closer though. It's 2 weeks away before Civilization Gathering Storm is released. They also released a video today, just covering natural disasters. Mm-hmm. Like they revealed blizzards, and they said, you know, blizzards are the worst. And the only people who actually benefit from it are Russians, and that's it. No one else can benefit from blizzards. and also, you know, they showed the Category 5 hurricane at sea. They showed volcanoes. They showed sandstorms. They showed flooding. And they showed all the dynamic ways. And here's a little thing, though. I noticed that on certain tiles, it had little icon, like little volcano icon, which was sort of like, you know, hinting, you know, if you build here, it may not be the safest place. But, you know, I guess that's to make it so that it's not a complete surprise if that volcano all of a sudden erupts, you know?
Yeah.
I would like, though, as a masochist, I would like an option to turn those off, so you're not really sure where those things will pop up.
That might be a toggleable option, because I know in Civ 4 a lot of people didn't like how random the random events were. It would just screw you out of nowhere. So I hope that these events are predictable enough that you can at least prepare for such eventualities happening.
And you also can build dikes for the rising waters, you know, if you have that, and dams to prevent from flooding and all that stuff. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be very interesting to see the malleability of the world. And like I said, this is the second expansion, you know, and the pattern has been since Civ 4, you know, it's always the second expansion that that completes the game and makes it feel like an epic game instead of just like a merely good one. We already discussed that Civ 6 already felt good when it started, but after two expansions, it got from good to great to amazing.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, this may be their last one, and they're doing their finishing touches for it before they go on to whatever else they want to do, I guess, Civ 7.
You know, I do hope that, well, the modding, I know that the modding community is probably going to add Civs, but I hope they have some, you know, one or two or three DLC Civs, you know, later on, so it just keeps it a little bit fresh.
You know, like, oh,
by the way, this is for $2. Here's another Civ that you might enjoy.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
Yeah. Or they could do it like Alpha Centauri and have two alien Civs that hate each other. So, anyways, so we're going to start off with game news, and we're going to start with the obvious one. Capcom has shipped 3 million units of Resident Evil 2, and this comes to us from GamesIndustry.biz. Capcom has shipped 3 million units of Resident Evil 2 in the high-profile remake's first week on sale. Resident Evil 2 launched on PC, Xbox One, and PlayStation 4 on January 25th, and it has been met with a high demand. In a statement released today, Capcom confirmed that they wanted to thank TJ Denzer for all his advertising for the game in the podcast. Signs that Capcom had another hit. Well, we don't know that. Maybe TJ was paid off. Let's see. They confirmed that the huge success of Monster Hunter World, there had been there since the game showing at E3 2018, when TJ came all over the place and everybody had to clean it up, where it picked up Best of Show at the Game Critics Awards. At the time of writing, Resident Evil 2 had a Metacritic score of 91 on both PS4 and Xbox One. In addition, its one-shot demo has been downloaded about 5 million times. By the way, I don't like that idea. Seriously. Wait, I don't like it. You can only play through it once, and oh, bye-bye, you can't play the demo ever again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's whatever.
I don't know. Yeah. Remember when Doom was released to shareware and they gave away an entire third of the game?
Yeah, but that's an entirely different thing.
Yeah, it was when
developers era left. Even.
Well, it's still early to judge Resident Evil 2's long-term sales potential. By the way, when they say shipped, that does not mean sales, but Capcom has said that it expects a similar performance to Resident Evil 7.
No, it's going to do much, much better than Resident Evil 7, I'm telling them right now.
Capcom says it expects a similar performance, so they would know, or maybe they're lying. Resident Evil 7, to this date, to now, has sold a total of 6 million units.
Mm-hmm.
So,
like, Resident Evil 2 is going to sell more than Resident Evil 7. And
Resident Evil 7 is going to sell more than Resident Evil 7? That's
no, I said Resident Evil 2 is going to. Resident Evil 2 is going to sell more than Resident Evil 7, for even singularly for the fact that, A, it's not in first person, which I know, like, a lot of people got past it eventually, but that was a turnoff for a lot of people when they first put eyes on Resident Evil 7. that, and it's, like, Claire and Leon are two of the most beloved characters in the entire Resident Evil franchise, and to see them on this level again is fucking phenomenal.
Well, it's a buffet of all the characters. I mean, you have the reporter Bob, you have Mayor's daughter. Oh, frick, I forgot her name. Liz? No, was it Liz?
Wait, no, I think
something Warren.
I think you're thinking of something else. I know Bob, but there's the scientist's daughter, Sherry Birkin.
Yeah. And Ada Wong makes an appearance.
And Ada Wong is definitely in there. This is where she was introduced, and she has a big old thing with Leon, which, yeah, they handled everything really, really well, especially fucking garbage-ass Chief Irons. Yeah. I will say, I was happy, like, yeah, we mentioned it, but, like, they do cover a lot of the story beats, but Marvin, the cop that Leon originally runs into, both Claire and Leon run into him this time, and he's fucking – he has a much better role in this one. Like, he actually serves a real purpose here. Mm. And I always liked Marvin, so I was always – I was a little happy to see that he got a bigger, expanded part in this.
Did he show up in the demo? Because the first few cops you see get, like, murdered right away.
Marvin is, like, a lieutenant who saves your life when you make it to the police station.
Uh-huh.
And he's sort of your ears on the ground in the main area for a good portion of the game.
I was surprised when Frank West showed up.
Oh, God.
Although, I wouldn't rule it out because, you know, Dead Rising and is also a Capcom game.
I'm trying to think because, like, Willamette was in was supposedly in Colorado.
That's it. You know, Capcom, if you're out there, we want Frank West DLC because he's covered Wars, damn it.
Willamette was in a Colorado town. I think Raccoon City is another mountain town, but I forget. I don't remember.
Yeah, if it's but Frank shows up in a helicopter. Come on. He could be anywhere, really. We need Frank.
I feel like they said it was like a Michigan town or maybe. I don't know.
Anyways. You know what I like about Frank, by the way? He has a dad body. He's not muscular like the other male characters. You know, he's just – he has a gut and he doesn't care.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially as the series goes on.
He gets fatter and fatter. It's like all the profits from Dead Rising he just spent on cheeseburgers.
I was almost 100% certain that it was the voice of Bender behind him by Dead Rising.
No.
Yeah, it sounded a lot like him.
Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, TJ.
Valve calls exclusive Metro Exodus deal with Epic unfair to Steam customers from Polygon. Early on Tuesday, Deep Silver and Epic Games announced that the PC version of 4A Games' Metro Exodus will, after today, be sold exclusively on the Epic Games Store and not on Steam. There are important caveats to that exclusivity. Existing pre-orders through Steam, which have been available for months, will be honored. Physical copies will include Steam keys, and the deal is exclusive for 1 year. Still, Valve calls the decision to pull Metro Exodus sales from Steam in favor of Epic's digital store unfair. In a statement posted to the game's Steam store page, Valve alerted potential buyers about the exclusivity arrangement and weighed in on what it means for its customers. Later today, sales of Metro Exodus will be discontinued on Steam due to a publisher decision to make the game exclusive to another PC store.
Stop. I love that. To another PC store. Whatever. We don't know what it is. It's just another PC store.
Some no-name nobody that we don't want to talk about.
Oh, it's Gamersgate? No. Oh, it's Good Old Games? No.
The developer and publisher have assured us that all prior sales of the game on Steam will be fulfilled on Steam, and Steam owners will be able to access the game in any future updates or DLC through Steam. We think the decision to remove the game is unfair to Steam customers, especially after a long pre-sale period. We apologize to Steam customers that were expecting it to be available for sale through the February 15th release date, but we were only recently informed of the decision and given a limited time to let everybody know. Meanwhile, Deep Silver attempted to calm concerns about the game's content and how Steam customers will be able to access it, and a fact also posted to Metro Exodus Steam store page. Steam store customers will still be able to purchase standalone DLC for Metro Exodus on the platform, the publisher said, and no existing content or future DLC will be exclusive to Steam store. All future title updates, patches, and free and premium DLC will be released simultaneously across both versions, Deep Silver said. So how is it unfair to Steam customers?
It's unfair to Gabe Newell. Here's the other thing which I just realized. You know, the fact that it's going to be on Steam at some point and they have to release the game on Steam for customers who pre-ordered means there's a Metro Exodus store page on the Steam store that's basically advertising the game, but you can't buy it there. It's a big old advertisement.
So let me get this straight. If you bought,
it's unfair to Valve.
If you pre-ordered the game through Steam, you'll still get the game through Steam, and you'll still be able to buy future DLC content through Steam. If you didn't do that, you can still go buy it at Epic. This is unfair to customers. How?
And it'll be on Steam in a year if you really, really, really want it on Steam.
Yeah, exactly. I was about to say that.
What a joke. This is
you know Steam. Why Valve is upset? Because it's entirely fair.
This is, again, Valve blaming everybody but themselves for being awful.
Two more games were announced that were going to be exclusive to the Epic Store. One was one we've discussed before, and that's Dauntless, which I'm looking forward to because I'm hoping it's Metro, it's a Monster Hunter World without the ass in it, or the ass controls anyway. And the other one is a game by Zen Studios. I forgot the name of it. It's just a weird sounding name. It's also going to be on the Microsoft Store for Xbox too. Zen loves Microsoft. They've been hand in hand for a long time now with their pinball series. So yeah, I mean, Valve, you know what? It's called competition.
Yeah, and for the longest time, nobody was able to do anything about it. And now,
I mean, what you could say with GOG, you know, Good Old Games is, yeah, it's DLC free, but you know, the problem with that is that you still had to download it. Steam, see, the thing about Steam that everybody loves is the game page, right? Or at least your library page.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to get your game, just download it. You go click a button there, it's downloading. You know,
right?
That's it. I mean. Here's the one thing I know about Epic's Game Store. I don't see thousands of asset flip games on it.
Yeah. I mean, there's the asset flips. There's the skin trading, which has been its own criminal empire at certain points of Steam's history.
I mean, Valve did have the best game of last year on Steam called Hunt Down the Freeman.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't and this is the stupidest thing about this is that Valve has the audacity to live in this sort of bubble where Steam customers just aren't going to be able to buy this anywhere. as if I can't just open the Epic page in one click and be like, all right, yeah, go ahead and buy it there.
Actually, I just got an email about a new Subnautica game. And here's the thing. I'm press with Epic Game Store, so a lot of those games are free for me, and I like that. So they bought me off. Epic bought me off. Everybody. They bought TJ off with Fortnite. They bought me off with free games. we're both Tobiased.
I mean, like Hades is over there on Epic, so I gotta throw some money at Supergiant Games.
I got Hades for free. I think I need to check it out. I mean, the Telltale Games is a Dead Walking thing is on Epic, but and it's free to me, but I have no interest in playing it.
Yeah.
Not even free.
They'd have to pay you money to play it.
A, I didn't play the third game in the series with Clem, and B, I don't want to feel depressed. At least the ending of Batman, The Enemy Within, it may have been a downer ending, but it was an up-downer ending, like whichever one you chose. You know, I chose villain Joker, and I was perfectly satisfied with the ending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but The Walking Dead, Robert Kirkman is a hardcore survivalist right winger, and it shows in his games, even if he's not writing it. And it's like I'd like to believe that people wouldn't behave like shits if there really was an apocalypse like that, a zombie apocalypse. I don't think that would exactly happen.
Yeah,
it's a survivalist wet dream.
Yeah, this idea that everybody joins into groups that always want to screw, that always want to kill everybody that's an outsider is, well, I mean, like, yeah, like you said.
Getting back to Epic, you know, here's the thing, Valve, you know, You already have the hugest store. You know what you can do to get people back? Just be better.
Yeah. Put a little bit of money into quality control. Put a little bit of money into making sure that your catalog isn't garbage.
And also, you know, not dominating the deal. You know why EA created Origin? Because they didn't want to fucking pay Valve to release DLC on it. That's why.
Yeah. It's like something like a 60-40 profit margin or something ridiculous like that.
You know, here's the thing. You can get Dragon Age Ultimate Edition on Steam. You know why? Because all the DLC is there already.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
But it's always been something ridiculous like a 60-40 share where. Valve takes a chunk of change off of everybody that sells through there, which is why a lot of people don't want to sell through there because they don't want to lose all that profit.
You know what they could,
especially yeah, I mean, especially indie developers, because like they're putting their own money into it.
Yeah, I remember when you could buy directly from the from the publisher. You know. Anyway,
that feels like the best way to get a game is buy it from the publisher and then you choose whatever platform you want it on.
You know how Valve could get it back if they, what's it called, a high-profile game. They just splooge the advertising on their page, especially for indie guys, so that it stands out. Because here's the thing, you know what people spend the most money on? Advertising and making sure that – you know why Gears of War, even though Epic is not – it has no real agreement with Microsoft, why they keep on creating Gears of War for the Xbox and Xbox alone? Because Microsoft pays for all the fucking advertising. All of it. You know, they just – they Epic say, here's our advertising budget. Microsoft says, here's the money. Go ahead and advertise it. You know? That's why it's – that's – you know, and – here's the thing. All of the Gears of War ads have been memorable. You know, from the Mad World ad to everything else.
Yeah, for sure.
So anyways, let's go on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay. American McGee confirmed to be working on Alice 3 story art and design. This is from Game Watcher. It's been 8 years since the release of Alice Madness Returns, and fans of the series will be happy to learn that American McGee is seemingly working on Alice 3. Titled Alice Asylum, the next game in the series will be a prequel in which a younger Alice fights through the trauma that results from losing her family. American McGee lists 4 ways in which fans can support Alice Asylum's development. The first involves signing up to the mailing list on the website. Following American McGee on social media will also help with keeping track of weekly YouTube live streams where fans can offer direct feedback. Another way to get involved in giving feedback to Alice Asylum is by supporting American McGee on Patreon, which gives you access to dedicated Discord server. The Patreon page is also a place where you can get a look at pre-production art, design, and planning. Lastly, a variety of merchandise items are available for purchase.
I'm not really a fan of the Alice series, but I know a lot of people who really, really, really love it.
Well, we just advertised for them, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's a bog-standard action-adventure 3D platformer, but people just like the art style, you know?
Yeah, the art style, and then the fact that you're playing Alice and walking, probably going through a trippy, twisted land. Just, you know, sounds like a fun adventure. I remember playing the first game, and I thought it was a nice platform, and it's just
far better than Tim Burton's version.
Yeah. And the atmosphere, I think, in the game was very nice. I liked it.
How about you, TJ? Do you play the Alice games?
I have. They're boring.
TJ? TJ?
Yes, I have played them. They're boring. I'm just like, the gameplay has never been like a strong point of those games, and then like the whole concept is just like, what if Alice in Wonderland but super fucked up and dark? And I'm just like, oh my god, this is
Alice in Wonderland has always been fucked up and dark.
I mean, yeah, but like overtly so.
I mean, no, this one just adds violence, you know, sure, the knife.
But, like, it takes that and is like, what if all the crazy dark stuff about Alice in Wonderland was right on the surface and punching you in the face? And it's like, this is an edgelord fantasy and whatever.
No, it's not edgelord fantasy. It's a Hot Topic fantasy.
That's not far different.
I mean, here's the thing. You know, I'm not a fan of the series, but I like things that are different, you know. And the Alice series has always been different, you know, and I hate to say, you know, and every game looks the same these days. I mean, even Resident Evil 2, you know, while it's great and all that stuff, it still looks like the same as any other zombie game on the surface, you know. You know, we need stuff that's really kinky and weird. That's why it's so important Tim Schafer exists. I mean, who else would come up with Headlander or stacking for that matter, in which you're just a floating head and you're taking control of other people's bodies?
Yeah, it's, and I've played through them enough to know that like they don't take any different steps with those games either.
Yeah, they're not deep, but still,
it's always like, oh, like the Cheshire Cat is there, the Caterpillar is there, the Mad Hatter and all that shit is there, and it's like, how many times can you retell that story? in game. I guess if you, you know, put the, I guess if you put the games 5 years apart each time, people forget. But at the same time, it doesn't.
You'd be surprised, TJ, how many times the story is retold and they add things to it. I mean, in the past two centuries or so, Robin Hood has been retold like 8 or 16 times or something like that. It just, you know, they retell it every, I don't know, I guess once a generation or maybe multiple times, because people that don't want to see the past version for whatever reason, and they want a new version.
Well, here's the thing. Alice is in the public domain now, so you can do whatever you want. But you know what also is in the public domain? The Wizard of Oz. And I've already had I already read a comic book, and I know it's done a lot of other things, in which you had a crossover between Alice in Wonderland and Dorothy Gale from The Wizard of Oz. And actually, you know, I remember American McGee was going to make a Wizard of Oz game. Do you remember? I don't think it ever made it, but he had the designs for it. But it would be nice if Alice, you know, Alice Asylum, maybe they should do a crossover with a Wizard of Oz and have Alice end up in the Land of Oz instead of in Wonderland. And hell, you could take Dorothy and put her in Wonderland and see what happens.
I mean, yeah, and to your point, Scott, when Russell Crowe is available, you make a Robin Hood movie.
Well, Russell Crowe is currently doing the Roger Ailes biopic for Showtime.
Yeah.
And I know this because I was on set with him. And here's the weird thing, and we're going way off topic from video games. Before I left L.A., I did the a Roger Ailes movie, which is starring John Lithgow as Roger Ailes. The first thing I do when I come back is I do a Roger Ailes for Showtime with Russell Crowe. So I'm in both Roger Ailes movies.
Nice.
Which is weird. I'm the only person who's going to be – I'm probably going to be able to claim both credits because one is in L.A. and the other one is in New York.
Nice. But I will say, like – and this is speaking as someone who like just finished playing Resident Evil 2 Remake twice. There's – you can retell the same thing and do different things with it, but like the problem is that like Resident Evil 2 Remake is much, much different from Resident Evil 2 in 1998. They did all sorts of crazy new shit, and it plays really fun. I've never played like the Alice games. They're just like
they're platform, they're 3D platformers, you know.
But they're like super simple and kind of boring 3D platformers is my problem with them.
Well, here's the thing. He's going for atmosphere, and for a lot of people, that atmosphere really works. And here's the thing: even though it's simplified gameplay, sometimes that's how you get people who don't normally play video games to play.
Sure,
you know.
But like, you can also, but like,
here's the thing: you can always say it's not for me.
when you put it all into atmosphere and forget about making the gameplay interesting, that's where you lose me.
Well, I don't even think the atmosphere to me is all that interesting. But like I said, a lot of people love that game, and it's, you know,
sure.
The question is
fair enough.
Here's the thing, though. How many people still want to play? You know, sometimes you can have something that everybody loves, but people just say, "Oh, I'm onto this now." You know, so we'll see.
Yeah.
Like I said, it'll be better than the Tim Burton Alice movies.
Oh, for sure. I just hope that I hope they do something interesting with the gameplay.
Well, here's the thing. The only thing that worries me is they're doing a prequel. So, and prequels, you know, those are dodgy. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Fallout 76 Survival Mode, PvP beta, starting in March. And this comes to us also from Game Watcher. Fallout 76 is one of the more notorious launches of 2018 due to its many issues and several controversies that have surrounded it. Given the precarious site it's launched in, Bethesda is pushing towards fixing bugs and addressing player complaints. One complaint that players regarded Fallout 76's PvP. In order to engage the battles with the other players, you had to shoot them with minimal damage and wait for them to shoot back. Which is kind of odd, because if you could just chip away at someone's health if they chose to ignore you. This goes without saying that PvP in Fallout 76 didn't live up to expectations, and Bethesda is looking to change that with upcoming survival mode. I'm going to tell you something. I never engaged in PvP in Fallout 76. No one was interested enough in doing PvP. The Fallout 76 survival mode is an entirely separate mode with fewer restrictions on PvP. Selectable from the main menu, survival mode will feature the same world and quests as the main game, but without imposed PvP restrictions. All players that aren't in your group are flagged as hostile, and they no longer need quote-unquote permission to engage in PvP battles. Players can tackle Fallout 76's survival mode with a brand new character or transfer existing ones from the main adventure mode. Progress persists between the two modes, so anything you do in survival will carry over to adventure and vice versa. Survival mode will also feature level scaling as it's implemented in adventure mode in order to give new characters a chance against higher level ones. Bethesda plans on experimenting with different rules once Fallout 76 survival beta kicks off. At first, dying in survival mode won't give access to the Seek Revenge respawn option, Fallout 76 and your camp being the only places where you're able to respawn. Killing another player will earn you double caps alongside a chance they drop their aid or other items with their junk. Fallout 76 survival mode players won't be able to go into adventure mode to chase aid items or double cap rewards. Bethesda also plans to add leaderboards to the Fallout 76 survival beta. With the mode currently in development, Bethesda hopes to release Fallout 76 survival beta mode in March. We all know where this is going, don't you? You know where it's going. It's going to go into a fucking battle royale mode. You know, it's made for because, you know, the world of Fallout 76 is huge. Why wouldn't you have a battle royale mode?
Yeah. I guess that we could always hope that it's more towards what we've talked about before, like maybe a planet side model. But whatever they do, like whatever.
It's desperation.
It is. Yeah, that's pretty blatantly clear that it is. They got to do something with this because it's not like panning out the way that they wanted it to.
Remember when we were worried about griefing in Fallout 76? Apparently, we didn't need to bother because people were too bored to grief.
Yeah. And, like, it's a shame. It's a shame that a Fallout game has to be this.
I don't know if it's a shame. Here's the thing. It's like the Valve thing, you know?
It is a shame.
Talk about their complacency, you know?
It is a super shame, because I love the Fallout franchise, and I don't want it to die, but, like, this is not doing it any favors.
Although, you know, maybe Interplay will make a better Fallout game than... Well, not Interplay, I mean, InXile will make a better Fallout game than them.
Maybe.
I mean, they were doing Wasteland, but I'm talking about a first-person one. The Outer Worlds actually is what I'm really looking forward to. Obsidian, even though it's not Microsoft, but I think that might be the Fallout game I wanted.
You know what I heard the other day, and this was actually legitimately interesting to me. There's a group of people that are rebuilding Fallout 2 and Fallout 4's engine, and that sounds cool as fuck. I would absolutely play, like, Fallout 2 on Fallout 4. Have you heard about this, Jonah?
Yeah, I did.
But, like, that is genuinely cool to me, because Fallout 2, like, it's been such a long time. I remember the story beats, but not well enough that if I jumped back into that, it would be all refresh. It would be
you
like...
You have that. I mean, you have people making the Oblivion world in Skyrim. Sure. The Morrowind world in Skyrim, which is more...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one.
Sure, but, like, there was never a 3D thing that you could copy from for Fallout 2. It was a overhead...
Well, I remember they did Ultima 5 in a different 3D engine. I forgot what it was. I think it was the Myth Engine, maybe?
Yeah, but isn't that cool? Like, I think it's cool when they take stuff like that.
I guess. I don't have fond memories of Fallout 2. Not really.
Ah.
I mean, not that I didn't like it. It's just that that's a game. Just one in one ear and out the other.
I really enjoyed Fallout 2, so it's super exciting to me. Like, it's actually legitimately more exciting to me than building a Fallout New Vegas in Fallout 4, because I know what Fallout New Vegas looks like in 3D. I know what that world is. If you just polished it up and
for Fallout New Vegas, we don't want a Fallout New Vegas in Fallout 4. We want a Fallout New Vegas 2.
Well, I'm just saying that, like, I know what Fallout New Vegas looks like in 3D. I've seen that. I've been there. But I don't know what Fallout 2 looks like in that world. So that's kind of interesting to me, like the artistic depth that would have to go into that sounds cool.
Yeah.
How do you take everything from a overhead, what's the word for it? Games like isometric RPG. And translate it into something that you can look up and down and all around and see everything.
Up and down and all around.
I don't know. It just, it's, it, that seems 100% more cool than anything going on with Fallout 76 right now.
You know, I think the question of the week would be, what remake do you want to see the most right now? What game you really want to see remade the most? I know what my answer is. What?
My answer would be the SSI Gold Box games.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, imagine those in the Skyrim engine.
Any particular
one? That would be incredible.
Any particular one?
Yeah, I think the Silver Blades, I liked that one. I also liked the Pool of Radiance one, too, because...
I prefer Pool of Radiance, the first one. Here's the thing, I never got to play Pools of Darkness, though.
Oh, that's a shame. That was a good one, too.
Mm-hmm.
But I liked Pools of Radiance because you had this quest to take out the people that had abducted you and turned you into this like assassin, and you had this little tattoo of each of them.
Yeah, it glows. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm a weirdo. I want to see Hillsfar again.
That would be good too. There's a lot of good ones.
Yeah, but Hillsfar was the odd duck because that one you had, you know, you're riding on a horse, you had to jump over these obstacles when you're going to Hillsfar. It was just weird. It was a weird AD&D game.
For me, I think the one that comes to mind the easiest and fastest, because I've often thought about it, is Zelda, Legend of Zelda 2, Adventures of Link.
Do you still want it to be a 2D? Yeah. You want it to be still be a 2D?
Yeah, you know what I would want it to be? I would want them to give it like the Metroid 2 Return of Samus treatment that they did.
You make it, forget that. Make it a Metroidvania game.
Yeah, because it had that side-scrolling. It had some RPG elements. It had like the overhead map where you could travel around to different areas. I think it would be really interesting to see that redone, all of that redone in a coherent fashion that you didn't have to like look up guides for everything and make save states anywhere. Mm. It's because like the I challenge that the second Zelda game is one of the most interesting of the and different of the whole series.
Of course
series.
It's the most interesting. It's the only one that wasn't top down or isometric or anything like that.
And like it was so hard because of like all the translation errors and all sorts of different things about it. I think it would be
cool. Did it have any bullshit like Simon's Quest, Castlevania 2? Like, you had to look up a guide in order to move forward?
Absolutely. There's a famous one in there. You know the phrase, I am error?
Yeah.
That comes from Zelda 2.
Yeah, I know. But I just mean that you couldn't move ahead with the game unless you looked it up. Like, in Simon's Quest, remember, you had that thing in which you had to do things that you would never do normally just to advance in the plot.
Yeah, that's basically what I'm saying, is that due to translation errors, Zelda 2 is chock full of those things. Just like characters that say these weirdly obscure things that you would, like, sometimes it makes sense, other times it's like, what the fuck does that even mean?
And you people just tell to, you stuff that is like, what? Why are you telling me this?
And we never questioned it back in the day because we were like kids and we didn't think about it and we had all day to play these games and figure it out.
For me, it would be Deus Ex. The original Deus Ex. I would love to see that in an upgraded graphics. I mean, real time. The thing about Deus Ex, though, it had some wide open levels, you know. But that's what I want, you know, something wide. And we can do those now.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, we get shit like Deus Ex Mankind Divided.
Yeah, that's
2 hours long and in a cramped area.
That's the only thing. That's the only issue I have, is that I would not want it to be like those two, like Mankind Divided or Human.
No, I mean, you don't have to have them. You don't have to have extreme graphics. Damn it, just have it. You know, mid tier graphics. You know, Grand Theft Auto graphics.
I'll forever have a grudge against Human Revolution.
I didn't mind Human. Well, one thing I didn't mind it because I actually completed it. My computer couldn't handle Mankind Divided. But even then, it was so stupid. And Yahtzee explained it best. You know, it's like, you know, here's your pacemaker, Grandma. Okay, now we're gonna. Now you're an Aug scum, so we're gonna send you into a ghetto.
Yeah, and like, I had issues more with the gameplay. Human Revolution will forever. I'll forever hold a grudge against that game because I tried to play stealth and social. And then in boss fights, it forces you into combat.
Oh, the first one, I knew how to deal with them, though. Here's the thing. You know what you do? You just toss those combustible barrels at them. That's how I beat them.
Yeah, but the point is that, like, it was all like, you can play it your own way, stealth, social, combat, hacking.
This is what happens when you outsource your boss battles.
And then, you get to that boss battle, and it's like, fuck all that choice. You have to fight this man and kill him.
Well, that's what I, you know.
And it's like, no, that's not what you told me I was going to get to do. Now, so pretty much you're telling me right now, at this point, I have respect the entirely wrong way for these particular situations, and I'm just sort of fucked.
I will say, you know, when I ghosted a level, I felt powerful.
Yeah, that was a good thing. That was a good feeling. And then the boss battles were just, like, fucking awful.
It's like, I did a level in which they didn't even know I existed. Just in and out. No one knew I was there. I saved the hostages. No one knew I was there. Everybody was shocked that I came out. Oh, by the way, the hostages are saved. Mm-hmm. What I did like about that, though, is if you played the game, and I didn't know this, if you took too long in the building just fucking around, when you went there, the hostages were dead.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like in every Deus Ex game, you know, you could do whatever you wanted, but once the even when the mission was starting, I mean, when the boat was sinking, you could just stay there in the middle of it and just – it would just keep on rattling it, but it wouldn't sink until he actually left it. Here, it's sort of like, oh, yeah, guess what? You were fucking about, and the hostages are dead. What?
Yeah, so maybe Deus Ex Remake, but, like, handled by Night Dive Studios or someone better.
Well, you know, I'm still getting updates about System Shock, so.
Night Dive Studios would be the perfect crew to handle a Deus Ex Remake.
Oh, I just got my Psychonauts 2 t-shirt and my badges, you know, some of the stuff, some of the swag that I'm supposed to get for being an $800 backer. I haven't gotten the book bag yet. So, yeah. So anyway, that's the question of the week. What remake would you like to see the most? And mine was Deus Ex.
Zelda 2 for me. Absolutely.
And Scott completely forgot which game he was thinking of.
We were talking about Fallout 76.
No,
we moved.
You said some SSI Gold Box games. Which one was your favorite?
Gold Box games, yeah.
Oh, I was saying Pools of Radiance or the Silver Blades one. Mm. I just liked what I really loved about it was that you can import your character from one to the next, and you would go on a significantly more stronger adventure as you went along.
You know what, Scott?
So here's, I really you know loved love, games that allowed me to do that, and that was
you know what,
a strong
love
thing.
Even more than the Gold Box games?
Gold Box games.
You know what I would love even more? If they did a remake of Unlimited Adventures.
That would be cool.
You know, here's the thing. I prefer to create than, you know, I would want to make and have it so that you can, you know, you can have it compile the game so it's a standalone. So I say, hey, Scott, check out this AD&D module I just made. Okay. Shoot it off to you.
Oh, people would love that.
Yeah, I mean, there's RPG Maker, but it's not the same thing.
No, not at all. Like, and it is cool in its own way, but, like, I agree. There needs to be more things, like a straight-up D&D campaign maker type thing.
Hey. Look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the history news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy your feedback, so leave us comments on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, to sub a gaming. Excuse me. Also, to sub at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. You know, I haven't checked iTunes comments in a while. If there's any new comments, I'm gonna post them in the next episode. So if you want to leave us an iTunes comment and have it read on the show, feel free. Post the comment. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And yay, my computer didn't crash.
Hooray.
So we got through it, and we're going to be with Phoenicia soon. Well, that made no sense. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.